welcome to another podcast. My name's Russell, and I'm with
Richard,
and via Skype. We dished out a few new caps in the last couple of games, so I'm gonna be James Lawrence, just sort of steady, dependable, nothing too flashy. Did the basics well. Who do you want to be?
Well, I'm Matondo. Let's get that right straight away.
I knew you were gonna pick Matondo.
Yeah. Why even ask me?
Yeah.
He was excited, wasn't he?
He was.
Like, I was in danger of falling asleep before he came on. I was impressed.
It means it leaves you, though. You can either be Kieran Freeman, Leon. Or Dan James.
I used to play fullback as a kid, so I'll be Freeman then.
Okay.
Oh.
I felt a bit sorry for Dan James because when Matondo came on and started playing as he did, you know, the game is completely different by that point, you know. The change has been made. It begins to fragment. We're just, which I'm sure we'll come on to, we've just got sort of no shape. There's just like lots of players running around. Mm. Dan James probably sitting on the bench looking at Matondo going, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think we can all wish we could run that fast with and without the ball. But like, James didn't look ready to me for that situation. Certainly not playing in a mixed team, which is what it was. The comparison was striking with Matondo, but also, I mean, when Woodburn came on, Woodburn didn't set the game alight. He looked short, not quite in the right space, I don't think. Clearly lacking sharpness and so on. James and Matondo, it's not really a fair comparison. I mean, I can't imagine James will ever be at that level. But he didn't make any awful mistakes. I think it was just a struggle for him to get up to pace and get kind of...
I think if
impose himself.
Yeah, I think if Giggs wants this sort of fluid sort of system up front where they're interchanging, they're swapping flanks, they're dropping, they're coming narrow, all this sort of stuff, there's a lot reliant on overlaps. And I can remember watching the Ireland game at home and Roberts never knew quite when to stick, when to twist, when Bale was just dropping and just coming in, tucking in, almost like an old sort of inside right type role. Roberts was there. And you can see in the game since that he's beginning to read Bale's game in that regard. And it must be hard for a young player to come into that system then and suddenly think, hang on a minute, right, I've got to look at the body language, I've got to look at the runs, I've got to try and guess where another player is going to go. And I'm not sure it's random as such. There's clearly something in it, but it can't be straightforward if you tend to be leaving a club set up where you tend to have a bit more discipline in the role. Not discipline, but you tend to know what your role is. This seems to be a little bit more kind of intuitive and potentially kind of off the cuff, which I think longer term is really kind of exciting, but it must be hard to adjust to if you're a young player like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think, I mean, Freeman, I'm looking now, came on in the 78th minute. He didn't look comfortable, I don't think. He kind of looked like what he was, which is you wouldn't class him as a youngster.
No.
Championship player. But, I mean, I think... The result was a bad result and it was a bad performance. It looks worse given the context of what happened with the Denmark game, I think. No one would have cared about this game had we beaten Denmark, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think Giggs has used the whole 9 games to test players out ready for... This is kind of what I'm hoping, and it's, I think, the logical conclusion is to think he has used the entire period of games to test out everyone ready for the proper, the kind of the full-on competitive qualifiers. And I think some people have shown they can step up, some have stepped up, and some people there would either be doubts about or quite clearly are not. I mean, I would just say Paul Dummett was rotten. He was dreadful. He wasn't on for long enough to kind of give him, I guess, a complete analysis, but he was so uncomfortable on the ball, it was unreal. Yeah. Like, this guy cannot play left back in our team. I mean, like, he plays for Benitez, who's a fantastic defensive coach, he hasn't had any training in attack. That's quite clear. And it's not something that comes naturally to him. Chris Gunter is a better left back for our system than Paul Dummett. He was miserable. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
I thought it started off all right, and then I don't know, maybe it's because of the injury, but he lost the player, didn't he? And Denmark had a really good chance. And I thought, oh, he's in trouble here. But then he went off injured like a couple of minutes later, so maybe... He was already struggling with the injury, so perhaps those are the mitigating circumstances. But I agree with you that Gunter came on and immediately looked better. And Gunter put in some really good crosses with his left foot, actually.
They were better crosses.
Could have offered us more of an attacking threat, that's for sure.
I mean, they were better crosses than I've seen him do on the right-hand side.
He's played left-back for us before, early on.
Yeah.
He was playing left-back. I mean, I think Neil Ardley was getting caps on the other side. It's not an alien position to him.
The Norway game, the Kumas game, Gunter played left-back then, and I remember being really, really impressed. He got forward a lot. I think a lot of his early caps at left-back, and I always thought he was a player who could play top anywhere along the back line. So I think even with Conor Roberts emerging, and I thought he did well again over the two games, and looks like he's going to be a proper player for the next decade or so. I don't think that means like the end of Chris Gunter being a sort of regular player in the team, because I think he could still play. He could play centre back. He could play left back if we're missing a couple of people like we were. He's definitely on for the 100 caps still, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's a brilliant defender to have on the bench. An incredibly positive guy who can play anywhere across the back to a decent or good standard. A lot of the build-up with regards to Gunter kind of had a tone of goodbye, Chris Gunter. Like, we were never going to see him again. But to me, for sure, like, I would fully expect him, providing he can get his club situation okay, I'd fully expect to see him in the squad for the Euros and be, I mean, actually at the Euro tournament, I mean, definitely.
I think if you look at the other established senior players, Bale and Ramsey will miss games because they always have done. Ledley appears to have been eased out. I think we may see him once or twice again, but he's not a mainstay of the squad anymore. Your Edwards have moved on. You've got Allen, you've got King is still there. How long are we still going to be seeing King for? His club situation.
He was poor.
And then you've got Hennessy. So if you look at trying to sort of blood these players into the squad environment, not just into a system of formation, you need these players who are going to be able to provide that consistency. So I agree with you, Rich. I think even if he's not going to be a starter, over the course of the two games, it strikes me as perhaps he's second choice left back behind Ben Davies.
I hope he's ahead of Paul Dummett.
Well,
that's what I would say.
Taylor got a recall, but nobody was distraught when he pulled out the squad. So I think he's still there, but I think he brings a lot more than just playing ability. And the fact that he was captain as well for the game. Yes, he was captain against Panama, which was the night I think he became the most capped outfield player. So clearly there's an element there of giving the armband to him because of that. But I'm looking at that lineup and I'm thinking, well, the only other player I would give the armband to in Albania would have been maybe Joe Allen. And it was clear that he was never going to last the game anyway. So he's in that kind of captaincy team, isn't it? Sometimes I talk about these senior teams.
Yeah.
So the armbands maybe moves around maybe three or four players when they pull out and available, etc. So I think it's still, more than enough merit for him to be included in the squads.
And I think as well, he's a guy, based on all the evidence we have, he is happy to travel however many 100 miles and not play.
Well, it's the
not in the sense that because he wants to play, but he is not going to be causing problems.
Oh God, no!
If he doesn't merit selection.
Well, it's that brilliant story, isn't it? Where he's BBC, I think it's Radio Wales doing an interview, and it's the friend against the Netherlands, which is actually the first game. It was the podcast that we did, the very very first one, and the squad's been announced, and he's not in it, and he's not been told he's not in it. So in a break during the recording, I think he might be with Stefan Guerrero, but I stand corrected. He essentially basically phones up Chris Coleman and says, no, I'm fit. And Chris went, more or less, well, oh, I thought, you, oh, no, we heard, Redding told us you're injured. No, I'm fine. Oh, that's okay. Oh, no, you're in the squad then. And then the notion that a squad gets announced and he's not in it, and Gunter's just like, whoa, I'm not having this.
Yeah.
I think he's just brilliant, and is a testament to him and his passion. And, like he's always said, if he wasn't playing, he'd be in the terraces watching. So even if he is not in the squad, you can still probably see him travelling anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
I think as well, I would imagine, considering how young we're capping players now and the fact that we've had some success in qualifying for a tournament and we're thinking that's likely to happen again, that probably his overall caps record will be taken pretty soon. Maybe even by someone like Bale or who else is not far behind, Hennessy even, perhaps, depending on how our other goalkeepers develop. But at the same time, I think he's likely to be the first Welsh player to win 100 caps. And that, he'll always be the first Welsh players to win 100 caps, and that would be like a real great sort of tribute to just like his commitment, longevity, and, you know, and quality as well. You know, like, you know, this probably deserves a bit more credit for that as well. You know, stuff like the cross against Belgium for Vokes to head in. I mean, you don't get to play 93 times for a decent international team, which we have been for the past 4 years or so, unless you've got a bit of quality. So, like, fair play to the guy. You know, it's a hell of an achievement.
You do get the impression, based on what you just said then, and as you were trying to ponder who might catch him and overtake him, I was typing into Wayne Hennessy into Wiki just to double check his caps tally. It says 81, but I think that's right, because he obviously didn't play against Albania. But do you reckon he's having a little kind of little whispering in Gunter's ear this calendar year, because Gunter hasn't started some of the games? He must be getting to Gunter's ear going, you know, every time you don't play, I'm just inching closer.
Yeah, well, it's good. If they want to make that competitive, that's fantastic.
He's only 31 as well, Hennessy. So in goalkeeping terms, he's probably still got another 6 or 7 years.
And Hennessy's improving as well, which I never ever...
I think he's had a good year.
I actually thought...
He's had a good run of games for Wales.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks so much more assured.
And I think that's the annoying thing with the game yesterday, is that Ward didn't have much to do.
No.
He couldn't do much about the penalty, fine. They blazed one over the bar. There was that one sort of curling effort past the post that he looked like he had covered. So it was a hard opportunity for him to impress. Mm. But I think Hennessy's done. I think he's done okay. Lawrence, I thought, did okay.
Yeah, I thought he did okay. I wasn't maybe.
I'm
as...
playing him in this episode, remember? So go gently.
Well, yeah, please don't take it personally. I thought he didn't. There wasn't any actual errors or anything like that. I just thought it was a couple of moments, and he probably wasn't helped by playing with Lockyer. Not as a slant on Lockyer as such, but it's going to be harder being the senior guy and you're both starting your first game. Mm. I just thought there was a couple of moments where he seemed somewhat caught out of position, only sort of fractionally, and there was huge gaps between him and Lockyer quite often as well, which I kind of thought a better team would have mercilessly tore into them. But that being said, he didn't look terrible. He didn't do anything explicitly wrong. But I think it would be a case of easing him in and seeing how he goes. Potentially as well, he wouldn't be looking to stay in Anderlecht for all that long beyond this season, I can't believe, if he has ambitions to have a bigger career. So yeah, we'll see.
I think it was neat and tidy. I think it was quite good in distribution. You went to feed Alan. This was the issue with the Denmark game, was that there was never enough bodies in midfield at all during the Denmark game, and Giggs didn't sort it out. And then he takes Alan off against Albania, and that for me is more or less when the game started really falling apart, and any grip, any control he had on that just disappeared at that point. And again, they, like Denmark did, with ease just walked through midfield, and they gave the ball Albania away so many times to us, which helped us. But, you know, that's their fault, that's their issue, it's nothing to do with us. There was a little bit of harrying, and there's much more urgency when Albania had the ball than there was at any point again in the Denmark game. Mm-hmm. Denmark were under very little pressure when they were on the ball, I felt. But they just started walking through us once again. He basically was undergunned in midfield. And it was so patently obvious in both games. And I think when you do that, you're going to expose any defence. You look at any great defensive unit or any great centre-back partnership over the years, one thing they've got all in common about how good they are individually as a partnership, they tend to have a decent midfield in front of them, shielding, covering, you know, mopping up, closing down, you know, filling in for space, you know, and all these sorts of things. And I just think we're not doing the defenders any service in these two games by leaving it so open in midfield. And I think that's the biggest failing of this last couple of games on Giggs' part.
It's interesting to try and work out what Giggs is working towards. Like, I think his approach for the Nations League games, I would say he was taking them seriously as games. I'm a big fan of the Nations League. I think it's brilliant. I think Giggs was clearly still doing some experimenting of his, like, philosophy he wants to implement. He was trying things out even in the Nations League, which I think probably on balance is the right thing to do. But yeah, I'll be interested in how he approaches it, because Ramsey is not a first receiver guy like Alan is. That's just not suitable for him. He's a world-class number 10, but he just can't operate that deep a role. He can't do it. He's not suitable for it. I don't think Smith was injured, was he?
He had this club game, didn't he?
Well, yeah, so on the Sunday.
So I think there was this sort of arrangement whereby he was going to play for the first one, if at all, and then return.
Yeah. He's more suitable for that role than Aaron Ramsey. And I guess when Ampadu comes back, it depends what position he plays. But I think we're only going to really see what Giggs' vision is beyond the kind of more general idea of he wants fast counter-attacking play. But we're going to see the real vision of it at the first game, the qualifiers, providing everyone's fit and stuff. It kind of struck me that there's the issue with Ramsey of, given how well Brooks is doing, given how well, how incredible Bale is, and there seems like Giggs hasn't really played him as at the centre of the attack so much. So you've got Brooks, and you can't really put Ramsey out wide. So I'm just not quite sure where he's going to place Ramsey or how he's going to move, adjust the system. I mean, for me, you could put Ramsey as a more conventional midfielder if he's got two people next to him, I think. So that would be probably Ampadu and Allen, or Allen and Smith, maybe, if Ampadu's playing at the back. I'm reticent to go too overboard in criticisms of Giggs. And I have got a couple of... He's made some errors, quite clearly, but I don't know whether it's an error or it's a valid experiment that he's made in selection or tactics. So what I would say is, in terms of goodwill, Ryan Giggs has used it up for me. He's had a very long bedding in period. He's used up the goodwill. On the proviso that he is working towards something and it works out well, that's fantastic. Back him 100%. Yeah. But he hasn't got much slack left to play. He hasn't got any slack left to play with now.
What I thought was interesting on that kind of, developing on that theme a little bit, was, I don't know if you saw this in the stadium, but there was a point in the second half of the Denmark game where he was like really trying to G up the crowd. The camera cut to him on the sidelines, and he kind of looked disappointed and a bit sort of angry. I don't know, the volume wasn't on, so I don't know what the atmosphere was like. It was almost like he was having a bit of a go at the crowd. I didn't like to see it, really. I don't mind managers sort of G'ing up the crowd, maybe if it's a bit of a sort of, they're smiling, there's a bit of a laugh, and maybe if the team's winning or something like that. But we were 1-0 down at the time, and he looked a little bit like, come on, you've got to kind of help out here and sort of try and get the players back into this. And I thought, you know what, I think that the crowd would be sort of more behind the team and more behind, if they were kind of more behind you as a person. I think with Giggs, I don't think he had a huge amount of goodwill in the first place from the Welsh public because he underachieved as a player for Wales. Coleman and Speed had that goodwill in Coleman's case, because his career was cut short for the injury, and people knew that he was good mates with Speed. With Speed, it was because he played for Wales for so long, won so many caps. Giggs hasn't really got that, and I think a lot of the sort of core support didn't like the appointment in the first place. And I always felt like Giggs should have done and should be doing more to win over the Welsh footballing public, really, beyond the sort of Man United supporters, of which there are a lot, who like him because of what he did for the club. There seemed a little bit of a disconnect there when I kind of saw him on the sidelines trying to get the crowd going, and I was a bit sort of uncomfortable at the moment, really.
That's the first reference I've heard to that particular incident.
I'm just making a big deal out of it in my head. It wasn't like a big thing at the time. I'm sure. It's just something where I just thought in my head, you should have done more by this point to get the Welsh public on side. And I don't think we've seen enough of Giggs between games, between match week, at games. All this stuff like going to, that Coleman did all the time, Speed did, go to Eisteddfod, go to clubs. We haven't seen it from Giggs.
I don't think it's a coincidence that stuff's not happening. I think on the one or two occasions he's done it, it's been in Wrexham, which is the nearest place to where he's, I'm guessing, is based these days. I think that thing that came out about 2 weeks ago about he's not been to watch Swansea play, that sort of thing, and I don't know if that's true, but I mean, you know, it seemed to gain a bit of traction online. That doesn't help. But I think there's been an effort to actually keep him away from fans. So I don't think this is necessarily his choice per se. I think they recognised that there was not a huge constituency really keen for him to get it. And if anything, there was quite a hardcore, if that's the word, who were never really going to be won over by him. And I don't think it was a coincidence that his first game was...
If he goes to Clanroos Juniors or whatever and signs a bunch of autographs and has a bunch of photos taken with kids, people are just going to be like, good for you. No one's going to have a go at him. People are going to be pleased to see him in Aberystwyth and Newtown and have a fun, especially kids.
Maybe it's overly cautious. Maybe it's very risk averse. It is conspicuous. I mean, Coleman was doing the little kind of road shows, wasn't he? He was taking the questions. I never managed to get one, unfortunately, but the feedback I heard from people was that there wasn't a great deal of stage management. He was quite happy to answer the questions. Ingwin Hughes is there as well. So there's an element of sort of control, I guess, on the part of the FAW. But, I don't know what the reason is, but I agree with what you're saying, that he hasn't, won people over, but maybe there were some people he was never going to win over. I think that's interesting going forward if what you say is true, Rich, in that he hasn't got a great deal of goodwill left. The bedding period, the honeymoon period is now over. He doesn't get another chance until March. What's he going to do in that time? Yes, he's going to be getting to games. He's going to be sending the scouts out and all the rest of it. But what's he going to be doing to be visible, to connect, to engage? Because I think he probably does need to earn a few brownie points in that regard.
Well, yeah, I think he's a different personality to Coleman, quite obviously.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's interesting just to kind of offer a slightly different angle to this. And again, it's a report based on what someone has said on Twitter, but someone who was out in Albania, I can't remember the Twitter handle, I think the Barry Horns may have retweeted it, but was saying he was really kind of ready to lay into Giggs when Giggs approached the fans. But instead, they had like a really good conversation where Giggs apologised and said, you deserve better, we're going to do better. Shook his hand very firmly. And the guy said, well, this is exactly what I wanted to see from him. So both of what you're saying is kind of relevant in the sense that he should be doing more. It's a different personality, but just let him be who he is, which seems like an incredibly private, serious football guy. Because the thing that I raised my eyebrows somewhat was after the Albania game, him blaming the players. Well, he was also at fault. Quite clearly, he was, I would argue, as much as at fault as the players.
But there's an interesting parallel with that. So somebody pointed out today, and I haven't verified this, but someone said it. They felt the game was very similar to the game against Australia at Cardiff City under Speed, and that it was the ninth game of each manager's reign. And I can remember, and I didn't go to that game, but I can remember, and it's in the books that have come out since then, and Speed, for the first time, rips into the players and said, you haven't done what we want you to do. You've left the game plan, you've forgotten the script, and ripped into them. And he sort of did it publicly as well. It's a coincidence, and not for one second, Giggs is making a play from Speed's rule book, but sometimes you have to call it out and sort of say it's not good enough. And I suppose this is the interesting thing. If there is something going on that Giggs is wanting us to put a certain pattern, a certain formation and all the rest of that, and the players haven't stuck to it, well then, rip into them. It begs the question, what is that? Because I'm still not quite sure myself.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. If however, they have stuck to it, then that actually could breed a little bit of resentment. We have stuck to it, but you've ripped into us because it hasn't worked or whatever. So it's a really kind of interesting next sort of 3 or 4 months going forward. Because he'd probably, in one respect, love to have a game now. Let's really kind of get back to it, drill it in, really kind of intense kind of training preparation, and then go.
I think it'd be interesting. I mean, I think there might be a couple of players who we're not going to see again, period. There's no point picking Sam Vokes. It's pointless. There's just no logical reason to have Sam Vokes in a squad, in a matchday squad. Or Andy King. They're not suitable to how Giggs wants to play. I mean, Vokes is a tree. He can't move. He can't move. You can't have him. It's pointless. Even then, he was getting chances, which he couldn't finish against Albania. I mean, look, Sam Vokes has had his time. He's contributed. It's pointless having him. He's not going to fit in. So, I mean, I think you probably won't see him again. I can't believe you'd see Andy King again. Unfortunately, on his 50th cap, he was horribly exposed. And you could say, well, he can't play for Leicester. It's not his fault. Well, that is his fault. It's his fault for not being good enough. And it's his fault for not forcing through a move. Ben Davis is quoted as saying Giggs has used the, quote, hairdryer treatment. The picture I'm kind of beginning to develop of Giggs is it's almost like he's been kind of criticised for having like a lack of charisma in the past. To me, he seems a borderline football savant in the sense that his only kind of interests and he can only convey himself through football. This is a guy who joined the Man United dressing room as a 16-year-old, won an incredibly tough, brutal dressing room by all accounts. Really, really tough men. And through like 90% of Ferguson's time at United, it was an incredibly tough, brutal dressing room. Not just from Ferguson, from the players. So I think that's his school, and I think that's how he's dealing with it. And I think people who aren't going to live up to expectations, I don't think we'll see Freeman again. I think he was tried out, didn't work. You're not going to see him. I think Giggs is going to be very, very ruthless with how he deals with players. And so maybe I was kind of taken aback that he called the players out in public. Coleman, I don't really think that wasn't really his style as such. Mm-hmm. But I think this is maybe how it's going to be. And he's going to kind of sort out who the personalities are, who can deal with it. And if you can't, that's tough. And you're done. And this is why you look at Matondo, who came on, incredibly confident, no nerves. He's ready. He'll play. James, I doubt it. Come back later. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, if we need you, but don't.
If there's another footballing podcast that uses the word savant, then, I mean, by all means, send me. But there isn't one, I'm pretty sure. I'm trying to find something to disagree with, and I'm kind of struggling because...
Savant, I could...
It's hard. It's harsh.
Like he's like Ryan Gosling in Blade Runner. Just a unit built for football, and that's how he perceives everything. I think it's interesting.
It's harsh, but it's... But I think it is fair.
On this podcast or whatever, people on Twitter thinking that they know more about football than a guy who was a Manchester United player for 23 years under Alex Ferguson, you know, you feel a bit of a twat for kind of criticising someone like that in a sense. You look at what he did as a player and that sort of longevity, and it's just amazing, really. And but having said all that, when you first saw the team sheet for the Denmark game, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I don't know what you guys thought, but my immediate response was, this is Spurs under Ozzy Ardiles. Just like five attacking players, Klinsmann, Sheringham, Bambi, Dumitrescu and Anderton in the same team, which was exciting, but they would lose games like 5-3. And Ardiles was sacked after 6 months because they had very little solid foundation and they shipped goals all the time. And we had five attacking players, really, in that starting lineup. And I just thought, we're going to get exposed here. I thought we did.
Talked about with Howland Gaz before the game and kind of thinking, he's going for it, which is, okay, bold, which is great. But we never, and again, this is how it went in the second half, in particular against Albania, we never then were able to have a platform. It's all very good having all these players, but unless you can kind of give them the ball and you're not having to pick up pieces and it's rushed and it's harried, you need the platform. And I just think it's maybe one too many. Soon against Denmark, I felt there was one too many of those forward offensive players who we needed to tuck in. And for me, it was Lawrence, because I thought Lawrence was appalling against Denmark. Yeah, there was no end product. I mean, he didn't even get a chance to even offer an end product because he was just running into people, falling over, giving it away. And it's not like he was being asked, I don't think, to play a completely different role. It was more like an inside left type role, going wide as well, get past the centre forward. It was just appalling, he was. And I'd have hauled him off at half time because it clearly wasn't working. And I know, obviously, Dummett has gone off by that point, so I know that probably didn't help. But, you know, the bench is big enough. It's not like in the old days where you named, like, two or three substitutes and you've got to make the most of it, or you're limited to only two substitutes. He had options. For me, you just need another man in there, and that man was on the bench, and it was Ampadu. I mean, surely, or Smith, OK, fine, but I mean, of the two, I'm going to go with Ampadu, I'm afraid. And there was some talk about Smith's been playing, Ampadu hasn't. I'm sorry, but you know, I know he's had injuries
But this kid can play and he just knows the game. What? So he knows when to run, he knows when not to run, he knows when to clatter players and all the rest of it.
Wasn't Ampadu fitness-based though, because he'd been injured?
Yeah.
That was my understanding. I'm sure, like, had he not...
And so not fit to start, yeah. But he was fit for 45, surely. In the end, he came on, 52 minutes or something anyway, 53 minutes. So for me, Lawrence had to come off and you had to put someone in the middle there to get a semblance of control. And then you can feed those players because they were creating chances, but it felt just a bit desperate. It didn't feel controlled attacks.
Well, what I would say is, because you brought Ampadu up, the second he came on, he lifted the crowd and he lifted the team.
Well, he did. He had to play a centre back. But if he'd come on at half time, between the half time and then him, you know, assuming that pans out, I mean, there's a butterfly effect here, but if he comes on at half-time in my scenario for Lawrence, and then we lose a defender, and so then he has to... It was Chester, wasn't it? So then we lose Chester, and then he drops in. Even for the 7 or 8 minutes, whatever that was, in midfield, we have got more control.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, he was controlling the midfield from centre-back. Well, I mean, not to the extent he would had he started out or et cetera, et cetera.
He'd have probably still ended up in defence, but then he's still having to replace him as a midfielder with a like for like. I'm guessing that is Smith. Or it would have been, you know, and it would have been a risky one on the night, but you give this James Lawrence a go, who can play defence in midfield as well. The shape just seemed all wrong. Mm. Or they're looking to try to get the ball wide and forward as quickly as possible, and you're trying to get past a bank of four, or you're getting past three midfielders, or whatever it might be, and then you can hurt players because you're getting them... Basically, your offensive players almost one-on-one or even got a man advantage against the opposing defenders. I can kind of see that. You've still got to get the ball in the first place. And we just weren't in their faces anywhere near enough. We were better in that against Albania. Inferior time, a team, admittedly. But whether you're getting in Eriksen's face or you're getting in some Albanian's face, there's not a huge difference there in terms of your approach to that game and your mindset. We were far too passive against Denmark.
For sure. And again, this is, let's go back to Ampadu. Ampadu took swift, brutal retribution on someone who crossed him. So you've got him on, and that invigorated the team.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how many other players would have done what Ampadu did. You can tick off all the great players he compares to, and that was Ramos. He was slighted, and he took revenge. And he did it in a way that was brutal, but it's a skill. Not every player can wipe someone out knowing they'll only get a yellow. Like, Ampadu's done it before against Panama. It's innate ability he's got. A lot of people would have got sent off. Or they wouldn't have had the guts to do it in the first place. Look, if you're telling me we've got a Ramos crossed with Beckenbauer, crossed with whoever, Rudhullet, for the midfield, he's next level. Like, I'm not having anything said against this guy's ability. It's unreal.
And I like the way the Giggs called it out and went, he did what he had to do, or words to that effect.
And Ash said as well.
Yeah, and it's what you said actually about the dressing room culture that Giggs grew up in. You can imagine Fergie getting Ampadu back in the dressing room and just being all over him and praising him. I mean, there's a brilliant bit in Ferguson's autobiography, which I thought got really boring after the first title at United. Up until that, it's a really, really good book. And they're out in I think it's like Saudi Arabia or Dubai or the UAE or somewhere like that. And I think he's with Aberdeen. And the centre forward is getting a hard time off the centre back. And he tells him, get into him, da da da. Nothing happens, keeps bossing him, gets him in the changing room. Right, you've got 5 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever it is, to tuck into him. And if you're not, you're off. Nothing improves. So Ferguson goes, right, subs himself on. Yeah. Oh. And he's still, you know, I think he's possibly still in his late 30s at this point. He's a game manager young. Basically, at the first available opportunity, just cuts this defender down, gets sent off. And basically, that is the point I was making. Made sure that nobody uttered a single word of it ever again to anybody in the media, the club or anything like that. And you just get a sense that it's a jungle rules thing, and if the opportunity's there, then a coach like Fergie, and maybe like Giggs, expects you to take it.
And that fills me with hope. We improved under Coleman through Ledley primarily, but even still, there was so much room for us to toughen up and just really start intimidating people. You've got to take people out sometimes, and there's ways of doing it, and Ampadu knows how to do it. And if he can kind of invigorate the team and be a leader in that sense, as well as ability-wise, that's only going to be good for us.
See, I mean, I was watching with the sound down, like I said before, but it seemed like the crowds loved it.
Oh, the second he did it, everyone knew what had happened. There was no mistaking what he had done.
When I was sitting, I wasn't too far away from it, but I was kind of almost in line with it, and you could see him. He lined that up.
You know, he knew exactly what he was doing from the moment that that play. Yeah. I think that was it. A Danish throw.
Yeah, Dolberg was. You could kind of see it coming.
Yeah.
And he ended up looking like roadkill. It was just. He'd been wiped out by a truck.
But I was much closer to the foul by him on Ampadu. He lined that up. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly that he was going to go through this player, and that player was going to go into those hoardings. And for me, it was a straight red, I thought.
I mean, it was funny. He picked the wrong guy.
Do you think Gigg could survive as not qualifying for the Euros? I don't think so. I mean, his contract is still a World Cup, isn't it?
So.
He's got two campaigns now. But I think, considering Euros is 24 teams, you get a playoff if you're third, and we're second seed, he's got to qualify for the Euros for me, or he should be out of the job.
There's a lot of different groups we could get and stuff like that. I believe Ian Mitchell-Moore for Wales and I wrote a kind of, these are the worst groups we could get, these are the best groups we could get. The worst group we could get wasn't that bad, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it was France as number one, you'd assume they'd finish top. Serbia, number three, I'd back us to beat them. All things being equal, and that Giggs isn't having an absolute disaster, etc., etc., I would go into that thinking we'd finish second. And then there was a couple of trickier teams. Trickier than one would normally expect from lower-ranked teams, but there's no way on earth Giggs could survive if we didn't qualify. I don't think this will happen, and I never would wish it to happen. I mean, I'm kind of quite neutral on Giggs as a person. I don't care either way. But if after three games we lost three, I think he should be sacked. It's pointless keeping him on if we get to the point where we're not going to qualify, and there's no way on earth he should be allowed to continue if we don't qualify. And so, I would say that of any manager with any amount of goodwill in the bank.
Well, I saw this again on Twitter today, actually. Someone made the point that who was the last manager to have their first nine games? There's no qualifiers in those. So, you know, he's had a longer lead-in period to his first campaign. Oh, don't get me wrong, Speed had dead rubber games at the end. You know, I get that. Toshak did when he came in. Okay, fine. But there's still something riding on those games. There's still something riding on it for the other team, if there's not, even if there's not a huge amount for us other than pride or whatever, or ranking points or, you know, seedings and pots and all the rest of that. To have a whole year, well, you know, more than that, before a campaign starts, I think is probably unprecedented. And most managers would love nine games minimum to go through 35, 36 players. Mm. I agree with you, some of those we're not going to see again. Marley Watkins we're not going to see again. Ryan Hedges we're not going to see again. Certainly not for a while. Freeman, etc. So he's had a really good look. A lot of managers haven't had that luxury. You know, Toshak didn't even have that many number of players to choose from, even if he wanted to. I don't think it's unreasonable to set the bar relatively high, given that we also, you know, were semi-finalists at the last Euros. So whether it be toast, I don't know. I think a lot depends on the FAW councillors. I think a lot depends on whether John Ford is still there, whether he's got someone else lined up after the FAW. You know, if it's a nice little UEFA job, well, lined up, is he going to have Giggs' back? I don't know. So there's other factors.
The crowd will turn on him.
The crowd will. I don't think the media will, because I think he's had a relatively soft ride from certain quarters.
Well, it seems like he's had a very easy ride to me from the media, who kind of backed him because he's the big name and helped them kind of sell papers and get clicks and stuff like that. It's interesting kind of watching the Craig Bellamy on Sky Sports the other day. We discussed this a little bit before going on air, but I mean, Bellamy quite obviously wants that job. I'm not saying he's like plotting against Giggs or anything. I don't think he's that nasty now. Anyway, he's matured a lot, but kind of next in line, isn't he, really? And some pointed comments he came out with about the fact that every single one of our sort of intermediate coaches and our manager all live in England. I mean, I don't necessarily sort of think that should disqualify you from you know, being a really good manager or coach for Wales. Brian Flynn, for instance, lived in Burnley since he was a teenager, but I don't think anyone ever worked harder on behalf of Welsh football than Flynn did in the 7 years he was intermediate manager. But it's sort of quite interesting that Bellamy's sort of putting forward in this interview on Sky how he would do the job, how, you know, you have to be based in Wales because we want meetings in Wales, we want a joined up thinking, we want people seen at games, we want people to be there at games and youth team games and know exactly what's happening. And it's kind of, it just seemed like a little bit of a dig.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I just think Bellamy it's all laid out there, isn't it? It's heart and sleeve stuff. I think what's interesting is not so much the content of what he said and the content then of his philosophy. It's the fact he seems to be really quite keen to put that philosophy out there and to keep kind of waving a flag and kind of saying, this is me, this is what I would do. And people can take it or leave that. And obviously the FAW decided to leave it. But I think in the same way that Coleman was interviewed, missed out, but then got the job, completely different circumstances, absolutely, of course. But I can sense there's almost a continuity element there that if and when Giggs moves on, Bellamy is next cab off the rank. It depends if Bellamy gets a club offer in the meantime and how well that goes. There's all these other factors. But the fact that he's putting his philosophy out there and into that level of detail, I think is really interesting. Having said all of that, you know, the reason all of these intermediate coaches are based in England is because, well, I mean, not least that's probably where they've settled and put down roots, etc. Because to be a pro in this country, you know, you have to play in England. And actually, most of our players are at academies at English clubs. So I'm not quite sure the relevance of them being all of the time in Wales, because with all due respect to Newtown...
Maybe you just meant the head coach.
Well, you know, when you pick that apart, you begin to think, okay, actually, what is it is he saying? Because I don't think on a very pragmatic basis, there's merit whether they're based in Swindon or Swansea.
I think one of the things he was saying was, if Bellamy was in the job, he would say, I would like to kind of do a presentation for the under-17s, under-18s, all this kind of stuff. I agree with you, Leon. I think he's making it very clear. And I mean, he's also kind of been on record more than once saying the absolute minimum target, it has to be that you qualify for the Euros. And then beyond that, you qualify for the Euros working towards the World Cup, which is going to be the big one historically for us. I think he wants it. But I it's really difficult to say, because going back to what we were saying at the start of the podcast, as good as the Nations League is, and as competitive as it has been, I don't quite think the same level of intensity and kind of do or die approach has been applied to it by Giggs as he will the qualifiers. So I'll kind of reserve judgment until that. If I had to say, I do think we will qualify for sure. But the only way we're going to know that is after the first doubleheader. That will reveal an awful lot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's been some silly stuff about how such an embarrassing result to lose to Albania that Giggs should go or whatever. Albania and San Marino, they did qualify for the last Euros, you know. So there's been, some of it's been a bit over the top, but he's got to deliver in the qualifiers for the Euros, that's for sure. I think finishing second in that group is fine. It's kind of, you know, it's where we are. It's Group B, we'll be Group B next time. We're second seeds. We're not as good as Denmark, who are on an absolutely unbelievable run, by the way. I didn't notice till the other day, but if you take away that game where they went on strike and they brought in a bunch of plumbers and stuff like that to play, they haven't lost for 24 matches since October 2016, because in the World Cup they drew that game that they went out in on penalties. Denmark are a really, really good team, and we beat Ireland twice, and we're better than them, and we kind of, you know, we were able to finally prove that we're better than them, because we didn't in the last set of qualifiers. So the Nations League, I think, went all right. We've lost a game to Albania, who aren't the worst team in the world. We lost 3-0 to Sweden just ahead of the Euros. Friendly results and performances don't really mean all that. The time to deliver is definitely going to be qualifiers, and it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see how it goes, because I'm still not quite sure about what Giggs is trying to do and what his preferred formation is. And if you said, you know, everyone's going to be fit and available, I can really confidently predict what 11 he's going to put out there for the first qualifying.
I think there's maybe 7 or 8 players, I think, nailed in. But it's more, I mean, I think like the formation. For me, I want to see Bale, I would say central, I think, as a central forward. That is where I would play him.
And this was a frustrating thing with Denmark, and to a certain extent with Albania. I mean, Ramsey and Bale came on later, obviously. But surely, whatever formation, whatever tactical approach, philosophy even, he wants, central to that surely still has to be, because there are, by far and away, our two best players, notwithstanding Allen, in terms of offensive players. You have to get them in positions where they can touch the ball a lot. Mm-hmm. They have to have a lot of touches in a game. And I don't mean Bale picking it up off the centre-back, which he does when we start getting desperate, or Ramsey. You just get them in positions, and he hasn't been able to fashion that yet. And so that, for me, is the concern. If it's because they're still adapting to a system, then fine. It took Coleman a while, it took Speed a while to get the message home. It happens. If he still hasn't identified what that is after 9 games, that's a worry. But neither of these things are going to be proven until March and the next doubleheader. Against Denmark, we couldn't get Bale into the game for maybe 4, 5, 6 minutes at a time. And that's, you just cannot afford to do that against Denmark, let alone if we end up getting an Italy or a Spain or something where they spanked us. So in a qualifier. So it's got to be something that gets those players involved in the game far more than they were in the last two. Mm. And they were against the Republic of Ireland, but then it's the Republic of Ireland. I think I agree with you in terms of, Leon, in terms of people wanting to go and saying it's one of our worst results. I mean, people sort of say it's the worst since Gould. It's not even the worst result in the last 13 months. That was losing to Ireland under Coleman at home. That's a far worse result. So, some of this has got to be proportionate. Yeah, everybody kind of reaches for the phone when they've had a couple of beers and they're frustrated. And, I get all of that. But the notion that we've suddenly gone back to like a dark age is really ridiculous as well. So there's got to be some sort of middle ground. We are in the Nations League. We feel between an Ireland and a Denmark. That feels about right now at the minute.
I think we'd be closer to Denmark. Looking back at it now, we're not having Davis and also Meppham in that defence. That's half a defence. And it's, in my opinion, the two best out of the four. That's going to be huge, having them back. Ben Davis, I mean, is unbelievable quality for a left back.
You begin to realise quite how much he brings to us.
It's kind of outrageous how good he is. But, and also, you kind of, Ben Davis, he's one of the senior players now as well, in terms of his stature, the club he plays at, the manager he plays for, his performances for us. He's a huge miss. Meppham, looking back on some of the highlights of him against Ireland at home, this guy is brilliant. He's a fantastic player. He has that mobility, assuredness on the ball, just presence, which is something you kind of maybe can't coach. He's going to be a huge player for us. So, I mean, it's obvious to say, but I just hope we don't have bad luck with injuries. We don't have an injury-prone squad, so there's no reason to think we will. I think we'll be fine. For me, it's just seeing that first team that he picks and knowing that this is what the idea is now. This is kind of how we're going to do it. Really interesting where Ampadu's going to play. I'm like fascinated by that. The tempting thing is to say, okay, he's really good in midfield. He's better than Smith, probably, certainly at this stage he is. Let's put him there. But I think there's like a world opening up of him and Meppham as centre-backs. That seems quite otherworldly in terms of their quality. So I don't know, it's just, we will see. Russ, I agree with you. Ramsey and Bale are our two best offensive players, even taking into account Brooks' good form and what potentially Wilson or Matondo could do. At the moment, it's still Ramsey and Bale for sure. So you need Ramsey in that 10. You need both those guys in positions where they can lose the ball and not have to track back, because neither will track back. Mm. They're not going to do it. And they shouldn't have to. They're kind of, you don't want, not all your players should track back. That's like a false kind of...
And as Bale gets older, you don't want, you want to be conserving his energy for these lung-busting bursts.
Yeah, it's completely false when people say he hasn't got that pace. He does have it. He just has to use it differently and conserve it. He can still do it 100%. Mm. He's by far our best finisher. He's by far our best offensive header of the ball as well. He needs to play as a forward.
Mm.
And you can still kind of have him cutting in off the wing, because the two guys with him, if you let Bale play in the middle, the two guys either side of him are going to be intelligent players. It would be whether it's Brooks, Matondo, Wilson, like a revamped, reset, Woodburn, whoever. They're all going to understand how to... And they all play with really good trainers at really good clubs. Mm. So they're going to understand this. And then you can have Ramsey behind them. It all, in theory, looks great. It's just how it's realised on the pitch.
I think criticism is valid. I think some of it has been, disproportionate and has been a bit knee-jerk. But it's just maybe a little bit, for want of a better word, ignorant of history and stuff like that. It's not a disastrous result. I thought we actually controlled the game relatively well against Albania to begin with. We had great chances. Brooks had the header. Folks had a couple of chances, a couple of passes, didn't quite just get the James on an overlap. So we're fine. It felt like a friendly that you can control against a team that, you know, we should be beating. How it unravelled and so quickly in the second half, despite bringing Ramsey and Bale on, that's the worry. But, you know, hopefully he learns from it. And in March, we'll see. By which point, of course, I think it's the 2nd of December, the draw gets made. You alluded to it earlier, Rich, the pots. Any teams you're looking for? Any teams you want to avoid?
I said I'd be confident of finishing ahead of Serbia. I'd rather not have them in the group. Yeah. That being said, because the top two qualify, but I'm not stressed out about wanting to avoid a superpower as number one. In some ways, it could play to our advantage. I'd love to have France at the Cardiff City Stadium and just see what we can do, because France will come and attack. They're a great team. I'd be quite happy to have that test.
The way it's panned out, it does look like there's a significant chance you're going to get one of the superpowers. I think Poland are up there, so you could draw them, for example. But
Poland were listed as our best, easiest group.
Yes, no, I kind of get that. I guess they're the weakest of those top seeds. But so I think there is a reasonable chance that you're going to get one of the superpowers, one of the big guns. But like
which
you said,
part are Netherlands in? Because they are on a very good.
They're on a great run, aren't they? Yeah. We don't tend to get anywhere near them, really.
No.
In games.
Robin's retired, hasn't he? So.
Oh, yes. And so, yeah, there's no chance of the world's most pointless thread.
He's still trying to work out that equation.
Yeah.
for the body angles.
It's a very niche apostle joke there.
Oh, people will get it.
Anyone you're looking for or looking to avoid, Leon?
Switzerland, because it's near. It's like a 3-hour drive to Basel. So that'd be good.
Just put yourself first.
I am, yeah. Liechtenstein, obviously, that's 2 hours away. So, Liechtenstein is the six seeds. We can't get Germany, can we? Because they're going to be second seeds, unbelievably.
Feel free to pick a non-German-speaking country.
I just want the countries near to me, so I can go to as many away trips as possible. Oh, we can't get Austria because they're second seeds, and Germany is second seeds. So, yeah, Switzerland, Liechtenstein. I'd like Scotland, I think, as third seed, because it's always fun to beat Scotland. And Hampden's a great trip. Yeah, we should be beating Scotland. Even though they're on a bit of a run, they're doing quite well, but, you know, we're better than them. I don't want Ireland, because I've had enough of them, frankly. Switzerland, Scotland, Liechtenstein. I can't see who in front of me who the others are, but I think I'd feel pretty confident whoever we got, like Rich, that we're capable of finishing second in any group that we're drawn in, and then let's back ourselves to win a playoff if we have to.
I'd quite like a country or two that we've never played before. Yeah, so I'd like, I don't know, like Kosovo or Gibraltar or something like that. Some of we haven't, but we've never played Lithuania. No offence, Ireland, but no offence.
Kosovo are likely to fifth seed. They're good. They're just a low-seeded team because they're a new team.
I have absolutely no doubt that a mid-90s Moldova, Georgia disaster waiting around the corner there. But I just think it just keeps things fresh to have another country I haven't played again for a while. Not sure on Spain again, given how much they toyed with us. And of course, if you do get a super, if we get Poland, that game's going to be at the Cardiff City Stadium. If you get France or Spain, it's back to the Millennium as well.
Do you think? I can't envisage that.
I think that's the silver lining for not getting promotion to the top tier in the Nations League. It's because I just thought that had Millennium Stadium written all over most of those games.
For the Nations League, I think I cannot imagine for the qualifiers. I haven't read anything that's hinted at that. When Leon was saying Giggs was getting a bit wound up with the crowd at the CCS, well, he doesn't need to be the manager when we're playing at the Cardiff City Stadium and we need the crowd G'ing up, does he? That would be nightmarish.
True.
For everyone, crowd, players, and him.
No, it doesn't bear.
Yeah, no, let's not even talk about it. It's just winding me up talking about it.
Any final comments, points, revelations?
No, I just want to emphasise that between now and our next games, you know, several months, I want to see Giggs. I want to see him. I want to see him at games. I want to see him in Wales watching our players. I think that will help.
You can come down to Cardiff Draconians in Gabalva and I'll sing for a drink in the Master Gunner afterwards.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I can more imagine him in the tactics room in his mansion, just sitting there puzzling over how to set the midfield up. I would rather he was doing that, to be honest, but there we go.
He could learn something at the Drax, I think.
Yeah, he could do both.
I'm pretty sure in the Master Gunner there's people who could have been contenders. Yeah, if not for a girl or a dodgy knee or something, they could have made it. I've been James Lawrence. You've been brilliant as Rabbi Matondo.
Rabbi Matondo.
And was it Kieran Freeman we decided in the end?
Yeah. So does that I mean, I'm not getting invited back.
You'll never be seen again or heard from.
You know, if the cat fits.
Bye then.
Actually, I mean, I've probably got a marginal chance of coming back as well as James Lawrence. Now, anyway, I'm not sure if we're going to be squeezing another one before Christmas. I'll probably need to edit in some sleigh bells or something. If not, I'll think about it. So make sure you've got Little Wonder on your Christmas list. Mm-hmm. Leon's book, by Brian Flynn.
Oh, cheers for that.
Put your book on there, Rich.
Toshack's book's good as well, actually.
Oh, the Tosh one, yeah.
Toshack's Way, it's just, yeah, well worth a read.
Yeah. But you reviewed it, didn't you, for the International Wales fanzine?
Yeah, yeah.
No spoilers, but I mean, does it reveal much? Does it clarify things or...?
It kind of clarifies things, really, that we are, in regards to Wales, anyway. There's a lot of absolutely fascinating stuff that I didn't know about his time at Real Madrid, etc. But, like, in regards to Wales, you know, it's just, he says absolutely that he just didn't like Robbie Savage as a player, for instance, and was, you know, just wanted him out from the start. And Bellamy's personality was problematic. But he does a really good sort of analysis of Bellamy's club career, which made me really chuckle, because I just thought, God, he's so right, actually, that played for a bunch of trophy-winning managers who never won anything when Bellamy was in the team. And for Toshack, that wasn't it. Cutting in places that well worth a read. Unfortunately, there's not very much about his international playing career, which is a real shame, but well worth reading anyway.
The revelation that Toshack once managed Real Madrid, that's he's never said.
No, twice as well, yeah.
Never
mentioned that.
So, until next time, a good Christmas.
Yeah, and you?
The Dolly Flowin. What is it in German?
Frohe Weihnachten.
What Leon said.